The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
You've found the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Trevor Dan with a roundup of interviews this week from Radio Days Europe, which drew more than 1,500 radio people from 62 countries to Paris. Now, this is the second Radio Today programme this week. Our interview with Martin Kellner about his sacking by BBC Radio Leeds is nestling somewhere near this podcast, and I do recommend it. It's an interesting glimpse into the mind of a veteran broadcaster and also into how BBC local radio is being run these days. But back to this show, and for the next few minutes, we'll have some techie talk about the first smartphone with a DAB chip and how Radio DNS can make your car radio look cool. We'll dip into radio on the front line in Syria and Poland. We'll meet two podcast pioneers from the States, and we'll hear from the newly appointed head of music at BBC Radio 1. First, though, staying at the BBC, we're expecting some big changes soon as the corporation struggles to adapt to its lower budgets. And if some of the rumours are correct, there won't even be a separate BBC radio division by the time Radio Days Europe meets in Amsterdam next year. If so, this will be the last time we'll hear from our first guest.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Helen Bowden is here. Helen runs BBC Radio. For you, Helen, well, you're in the news today, aren't you?
I am in the news today.
Because you've had a pop at the government, which is not something senior BBC executives often do.
Sometimes they need to.
And why is it necessary on this occasion?
It's about our future governance. And the core thing about the BBC, the thing that has kept it strong for all the decades of its life, has been its independence from political or commercial pressure. It's why the public trust us as much as they do. It's why the public trust us more than any other news provider. They know that we may make mistakes, but they're honest mistakes. They're not because someone was leaning on us politically or commercially. The new governance structure of the BBC that's been suggested by a man called Mr. Clementi is that there is a single board and our regulator becomes Ofcom, but the vast majority of people on that board are government appointees. Now, who gets appointed by government? Sometimes they are truly expert in media, for example, and sometimes they are just big donors to parties. And this is true of any government, not just this government. This board is going to decide the BBC's editorial policy, its editorial direction. It'll have oversight of news and current affairs, the things where our impartiality and independence are absolutely fundamental. And frankly, the suggestions that they are government appointees do to us feel like an undermining of our independence, and we want these to be robustly debated by the public.
Isn't your own Director General a government appointee?
He is, and we've always had some government appointees. We're not frightened of the notion of a government appointee, although it often goes through the Privy Council, which is a slightly arm's length relationship. But that's one role. Indeed, you can have a chairman who's a government appointee through the Privy Council. That's another role. But when you have the majority, and this isn't just the UK government, in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, there'll be appointees for those governments. Those are small places. It's easy for good people to feel leaned on, even if the person doing the leaning doesn't think they are.
Helen, in the last couple of years, Jimmy Savile, Tony Blackburn, cutbacks, reorganisations, is there any good news from the BBC?
The good news from the BBC is what we do day in, day out, hour in, hour out, and our fabulous audiences. Those things are really difficult and painful, and we try to learn from them. But the fact is, the British public still turns to the BBC in their millions every single day. We touch well over 95% of the population. And that is the sign of our strength and optimism. You know, it's very easy to become absorbed in the institution because you see it through the perspective of politicians and newspapers. The public really doesn't. The public decides. It has loads of choice and it chooses the BBC time and time and time again.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about was the extent to which you and other members of the BBC always talk about how BBC Radio is a success because it does other things. That you talk about Radio 1's YouTube channel, for instance. Do you think sometimes you take your eye off the ball of actually just making radio shows?
I absolutely don't do that because I'm of an age where the radio show really, really counts. And we have to ride both horses. We have to do the digital innovation. We have to make it sing, particularly for those audiences under 25 who take it as just for granted. They don't think of radio as anything other than audio, video, stills, social media. But you are right. It is very important that we never lose sight of how incredibly important radio as audio is. And I don't think we do in the BBC, but it's always worth reminding ourselves.
Dee Ford from Bauer talked about how commercial radio in the UK has just overtaken the BBC. She said for the first time ever. I'm not sure that's strictly true, but anyway. How do you feel about that?
I actually feel it's fine because they've opened many, many more stations. You know, they've done a brilliant job. I'm a great fan of Dee and of Bauer in particular. They've segmented their audience. They've done a lot of digital stations. Their local offer is fantastic. And in a sense, we haven't opened anything beyond those digital stations, anything new that we, you know, Six Music, Four Extra, One Extra, Five Live Plus. So they're actually getting at more audiences. And I think it's good that we've got a balance. Clearly, as director of BBC Radio, I don't want us to slip a long way below commercial radio, but actually the seesaw she used, the tilting backwards and forwards, feels to me to be a good place. We are a market intervention. We want the market to flourish. We also want great public service broadcasting.
Just finally, what did you make of the demonstration of the hybrid radio that switches between DAB and online?
I'm completely partisan on this. I'm the chairman of Radio Player, which is the little pan industry company that's helped create this. I think it's completely brilliant because as a consumer, you don't really care what the distribution method is. You just want to get great live radio without clunky technology getting in the way. You don't want to lose your signal. You don't want, if you're on IP, to have huge bills because you've listened to live radio. So I think it's a completely brilliant invention and absolutely typical of British radio. It's a pan-industry idea, and it was working together that we made that sing.
Thank you, Helen. I hope you're still here next year.
So do I.
Podcasts are on the agenda again at Radio Days Europe, and Caitlin Prest has been talking about the importance of storytelling in podcasts. Yours is called Heart?
The Heart.
The Heart.
Indeed.
And you're part of the Radiotopia group. So how's all that working?
I mean, it's great. I'm having a great time. I mean, we're making 24 episodes a year. We have a small budget to make it with. We're part of a collective of 11 other shows that are... Oh, actually, there's more now. I think there's 14.
99% Invisible, Helen Zaltzman.
Helen Zaltzman, yeah. Song Exploder, Memory Palace, Love and Radio.
It's almost like a network now.
It is a network. Totally. It is a network. But, I mean, the best part of it is that the other shows on the network are also really highly crafted, really high quality, and sort of take the same approach to audio storytelling that our show does. And it's, like, so fun to be able to sort of throw to these other shows. I mean, they were my favorite shows. Shows before we joined the network.
So storytelling, we know about Serial, obviously. Is that the way forward, the audio equivalent of the long read?
Well, I like the format. I think that there's a lot to be explored there. I think that even before Serial, I felt like, you know, there's a lot to be learned from the way that television is made. You know, expanding a narrative across episodes, I think for me, allows us to examine the human experience in a more realistic way. If we're doing documentary, I think that trying to fit a person's life story or even one conflict into, you know, a three-act structure that lasts for 1 hour, you simplify it. It's reductive. Whereas when you expand it across episodes for an entire season like that, you can really get into the complexity that really lies behind an issue and lies behind the conflicts that happen in our lives. And I think that, like, that's a really exciting form. But I don't think it's the only form.
One of the things that we learned from Serial is that there's a lot of value in explaining the process in the presenter, Sarah Koenig, in that sense, actually telling you what she's thinking, talking about how she's telling the story. Is that something that you try to do as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the idea that that you can be objective is... it's ridiculous. You know, we're not objective, we're human. And so the way that we come to a story is a really important thing to notify the audience of. You know, like, I think that you can go too far. I mean, I think with my work, I mean, the show is very, very personal, and people always ask me, like, how do you balance between being personal and being self-indulgent? And I think that you can always hear it when someone's being self-indulgent, when they're giving you information about themselves that you don't care about or isn't relevant to the story. I think that finding a way, well, I'm not Sarah Koenig, so I'm making stuff that is really personal. It's like personal content. I think that when you're making documentary, really serious documentary about facts and truth and where all of those things are very important, I think letting the audience know of your subjectivity is important. And I think that your relationship to the story is important. In my context, I'm telling stories that are about, like, you know, deeply, deeply scary, personal, intimate, vulnerable things, like a breakup. I mean, the last time that I kissed somebody and he didn't want to kiss me and I tried to make it happen and it was super embarrassing and awful and I interviewed him about it and it was horrible to listen to that tape. But, like, walking the line between being self-indulgent, I think the key to that is finding the through line of human experience that everyone can relate to, where you're offering something that is accessible to everyone and you're sort of figuring out what that through line is.
We're talking podcasts again, and this gentleman knows as much about podcasting as anybody because he looks after all those brilliant shows that we get from WNYC, like Radio Lab. One of the things I found really interesting about your presentation was that you talked about podcasting being different from broadcasting. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
I mean, the way that I think about it is that when you are listening to the radio, even when you're by yourself, you're aware that there are thousands of other people listening. It is kind of it's fundamentally a community experience. When you have chosen to download something into your phone and put the earbuds in, you're now in your own space, in your own head. And it's more of an on-demand experience than it is a broadcast experience. And so I think that requires a kind of authenticity that a big broadcast platform doesn't love, because broadcast tends to flatten things out in a certain way. And then the other thing is, I think that the audiences that are attracted to the podcasts are now attracted to something slightly different, a more authentic experience, language. You know, in America, there are things we can't do on the radio because of broadcast regulations, which we don't have at all on the podcast. And it's not to create things that are titillating, but it's about what's real. And if it doesn't feel real, you know, I think that somehow comes across to people. So everybody loves to say that radio is an intimate experience. Podcasting may be an erotic experience. I don't know. There's something beyond intimate that there is.
I want to ask you about the staffing. One of the things, I mean, I've been making podcasts for 10 years, and my production team is me.
Yes.
and many podcasts are. Yeah. They're just, you know, somebody with a microphone and a laptop. At the end of your podcast, there's a litany of members of a production team. I mean, how many people work on something like Radiolab?
Well, you know, it can be deceptive because that's also interns and other kinds of people. So the staffs are probably not as big as sometimes they sound. Radiolab is, you know, probably the most important show in the building in terms of its size and its scope and all kinds of other business implications. I wish I had a specific answer. Radiolab is probably 10 or 12 people, but they're also involved in live events and, you know, it's podcasting and a broadcast radio show and various other things. You know, most things now are starting out as two, three people. And I think what we've learned is that I could ask you to make a show by yourself and you probably would happily do it. But if I expect it to be significant and for you to be able to put the time you need to put into it, and I'm expecting that relationship to grow in some significant, you know, if I want you to have a big audience, then I've got to allow you to have enough people around you for you to focus on what you need to focus on. And
well,
I think we've
if
just...
If I may interrupt you,
yes.
Of course the main reason that that doesn't happen is because we don't have any money, because
yes.
We can't monetize
yeah.
podcasts, we
right.
can't get any revenue.
Right. Right.
It's not only Squarespace and MailChimp, is it?
Well, I think what you're going to see, and I'm not a prognosticator, but I think what you're going to see is that big media companies have gotten into the podcasting business. I mean, the number of big brand, The New Yorker magazine is an example with us, but big media brands that have come into the podcasting space are going to be bringing all the new advertisers with them. So, you know, this is very much cable television in America in the early days. You know, first you have 100 channels and very little audience, and all the advertising is from a guy who's trying to sell you a better knife. And ultimately, the audiences get bigger, the big advertisers come in, you know, better shows get made. And I think we're in the middle of that right now. So we love the people who are advertising as the Squarespaces and the MailChimps because they've made it possible to create something really exciting. But I think you're going to see the ubiquity of the podcast and the success of things like Serial have all advertisers waking up and saying, oh, wait, there's something here. It's been off my radar that audiences love and love passionately. I want to attach myself to that.
Dean Capello from WMRC, thank you.
Thank you.
Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
We know that the future of radio is mobile, but what's been holding us back for a long time is trying to get a decent radio signal into a smartphone. Well, as of Radio Days Europe 2016, we can now do that, and radio players Mike Hill can explain how it works. You've got it in your hand. Before we actually look at it, Mike, yeah, what's the principle?
Okay, so two world firsts here today. This is the LG Stylus 2 smartphone. It's got a DAB chip in it, and a couple of months ago when we realised this was coming to market shortly, we decided to make a hybrid version of the Radio Player app. Now, normally the Radio Player app streams the stations that you want over the internet. In this version, if it's available on DAB, it just plays you DAB. Why is that good? It saves battery life, up to 5 times less battery than it uses, and it doesn't cane your data plan as well, like streaming does.
So there it is. It's the LG Stylus.
So here I am. I've got some radio stations I've set as favourites in my Radio Player app, as always. And if I tap on Radio X, so it's gone off and looked whether DAB is available from Radio X, and it turns out that it is. So it's just playing DAB instead of streaming, as it says at the top there. Now, if I select another radio station that may not be available here, BBC Radio 1, it just starts streaming as normal and the DAB goes away. In other words, this is completely invisible to the user. It just works.
So if I'm driving along or I'm in the train, if it can get DAB, it'll give it me on DAB. If it can't, it will stream it.
Exactly.
Why didn't someone think of that before?
Well, there wasn't a handset available before with the DAB chip, but there is now, thanks to LG.
Radio and the connected car, it's a big issue. Radio DNS. Nick Piggott is here to tell us what that can help us with. We're in a Renault Twingo, at least you are, but I'm still outside it.
It is a modestly sized car, Trevor,
Nick,
I have to
what
say.
What is that hole in the middle where I'd expect a radio?
Well, as you buy the car, it comes with this radio which has FM and DAB in it, but it's not the most exciting radio in the world. However, it also comes with this very handy little bracket, and you pop the bracket into this hole in the middle here, and just click it in, and then you grab your smartphone, and you snap that into place, and you switch the radio on, and that's when this car begins to show it's a little bit cleverer than it looks.
So it's become a connected car in modern parlance.
It has. It's connected itself through my smartphone. So I'm still using the relatively simple radio that has come with the car, but it's able to talk to my smartphone, and there's a special app on the smartphone that's now giving me access to the radio. So you'll see here, this information is the hybrid radio information. I'm listening to radio, but the visuals, the logos, the click-through links, I'll demonstrate clicking here to go to the radio station website, that's all coming over IP through my phone's connection to the network. So I'm using only a very small amount of data to get that extra information. If I lose the internet, the radio won't stop, so I'm not going to get buffering and breakup as I'm driving along. I can change channels just by swiping on the phone like that. So that'll give me very, very simple navigation. Not only does it work on DAB, but if you flick over onto FM, it'll also work on FM as well. So I can scan up and down through the dial on FM.
The important thing I'm just thinking as you're doing this is, as a radio station, yep, we've got to make sure, haven't we, that we've given you all the metadata, all the information, the pictures, the scrolling
exactly
script, everything that we possibly can.
So what I can tell you is that car manufacturers, when we show them this, go, this is brilliant. We love radio, and we love the fact that you're making radio look modern, and we want to do this, but this only works for the car guys if they know that the majority of radio stations, whilst I'm flicking through the dial, have got this experience. It's no good to them if every radio station is just showing nothing at all. That's no good to them. What they want is they want the majority of stations to be showing the logo and some visuals. So what we're saying to broadcasters is do the small amount of work necessary so that your station's got a logo, it's got a click-through link. That's FM radio, but it looks like an app. So our message to radio stations is this is really easy to do. We can help you do it. We need everybody to do it. If you want broadcast radio to look and work like that in all the cars.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much indeed, Nick.
My pleasure. Thanks, Trevor.
Fred Jacobs is here from Jacobs Media from the US of A. Fred is an expert on the connected car. 2 years ago in Dublin, we talked about this and we were all going to hell in a handcart, but I think you sound a bit more positive now.
Well, I think the radio community has really woken up, and I think they now realize that the connected car space is a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. So I think broadcasters are actually working harder and more focused on the space, which is a great thing.
What's the dream then for radio people? What do we want drivers and passengers to experience when they get in the new car?
Well, the best case scenario is that radio is front and center the way it has always been. That's going to be much more of a challenge now, especially with Apple and Google moving into the center stack. So it becomes so paramount that radio content be essential, it be local, it be personality based, so that people get in the car and they're still thinking about radio.
I learned a new word today, or a new context for it, the word autonomous car. I thought we called them driverless cars, but no, autonomous cars. Presumably, when we have an autonomous car, we don't care whether we can even see where we're going. We saw a demonstration, didn't we, today of a screen that comes down in front of the windshield.
It actually, amazingly, is an opportunity for newspapers and magazines and other visual media to be able to finally invade the front seat of cars. It won't just be the kids in the back seat watching The Lion King. It could be, in fact, drivers actually enjoying video. So from a radio standpoint, it gets even more competitive. And autonomous cars are coming faster than anybody thought, including the automakers.
I was quite taken by Michael Hill's presentation of figures, which come from some research that Radio Player has done, saying that even people who've got every conceivable option from the internet, they still really want their radio, and it's our duty to find a way of talking to motor manufacturers to make sure they get it.
It's really essential research, because the reality is that nobody walks into a Ford showroom and says, I want to see that Fusion with the AM/FM radio. It's just assumed it's going to be there. So we have to demonstrate to the automakers that radio matters. It's always mattered. Consumers care. They can't even think or conceive about a car that doesn't have AM/FM radio. So it's a great piece of research. The NAB in the States just commissioned a similar study with essentially the same results. So we really have to take our message to the automakers.
So are you feeling slightly more optimistic than you were couple of years ago?
I am feeling slightly more optimistic. The radio industry clearly needs to speak in one voice. I think in the UK and in other countries that's happening. In the States, I think they're just beginning to wake up to the reality that we really do need to put aside our differences and talk to the auto industries as one voice. So I'm hoping that happens, yes.
Fred Jacobs, thank you very much.
Thank you, Trevor.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today program.
There's been a lot of frivolity, as there always is at Radio Days, but one of the talks we had this morning was really deeply moving, and it was Camilla Serran who gave it. You were talking about the fact that your government might think that you're actually committing treason by coming to talk to this conference. Give us some background about what's happening to broadcasting in Poland.
Well, as for treason part, the government says that anybody who criticizes it abroad is committing treason. Well, that's their way of talking. I don't think they will jail me when I come back, but, well, you know, anything can happen. And as for broadcasting in Poland, well, it's getting harder and harder. Firstly, because of the public media that are completely overtaken by the government and the government people. The politicians who rule the public media right now, they repeat daily messages from the ruling party on air and, well, in television at the radio. Plenty of people have been fired from their jobs and, well, they've actually passed a law that allowed them to fire them just straight away.
And this isn't happening in communist East Germany in the 1960s. This is happening in 2016 in an EU country. How is that allowed to happen?
Well, the official line is they got majority. So they got actually a popular vote, so they are allowed to do whatever they wish they want, whatever they wish to do. And, well, basically they are not wrong. They can do it. but the
but
way
what do your listeners think of having to put up with propaganda rather than impartial journalism?
Well, they actually switch off the public media. That's easy. Their numbers are down like by a half or something. So it's really going down. And independent media like mine actually are going up very, very quickly, which is, of course, good. But, you know, we only got 2% of audience, and a public radio station has got to altogether like 40% of audience. So,
and is there a chance that they might one day, you know, come along and bang on the door and shut you down?
I wouldn't call it a chance, but yes.
Oh,
it
really?
Is. Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is really, I mean, we're smiling, but this is really serious politics being played out here, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is, because we are part of a bigger press group, Polish-owned press group, actually, which is very important in terms of capital for the new government. But they actually hate us, simply. They think that we are actually actors on the political scene, and it's not really untrue as it goes with the newspaper, daily newspaper, Gazeta Wyborcza. They are taking active part in the politics. But my radio, no, we try to stay impartial. We try to kind of, how do you call it in English? I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask you, Camilla, what can we do, those of us who don't work in Poland but want to support impartial journalism in your country?
Well, first of all, you need to inform your audience, you know, because it actually can happen with you. It only takes one extremist party that will get majority in the parliament. You know, it's as easy as that. You know, the only thing that actually keeps you from this possibility is the custom. It's not the law, it's not the checks and balances, etc. It's the people, some things are simply not done. And they are getting done in Poland right now. You know?
Well, Camilla, we wish you every success and good luck.
Thank you so much.
In between all the talk of advertising and having fun and reaching audiences, there's been some really moving sessions at Radio Days Europe, and Lena was talking about reaching Syrian listeners, not just in Syria, but Syrian refugees, displaced persons. How are you reaching them, Lena?
We are trying to reach them by any kind of platform. We have a satellite channel, slideshow satellite channel. We have an apps on the smartphone. We have a website online, and we have an FM inside Syria. Not everywhere, but we have it.
And how are you funded? Who's paying for you to reach people who are, you know, not in favor of the regime?
Yeah, we are funded by a European organization who supports the freedom of expression in the conflict area in the world.
So I can imagine people listening to you in the most appalling circumstances, people in tents in Macedonia on the border. And is that true? Are those the kind of people you're reaching?
Yes, of course, because we give service to them, their need. Like, for example, we have a small program that talk if you are under siege and you know how many area inside Syria under siege or in tent, even under the tent, how you can make, like, if your children are cold, feeling cold, what are you doing from the simple things to make them warm? How you can do from a small things a light because they don't have electricity. So, we give them a lot of service. Even the medical service, you know, the doctor inside Syria even killed or left the country. So there are lack of doctors. So we were trying to have a doctor on the radio and give, like, answering their question.
And in the West, we think we have some problems with media, but it's life and death for you, isn't it?
That's what I was talking in my session. That's it's really different for our radio because really we cover the death every day, and sometimes you said, what should I do, what should I cover, how can I, what you gonna talk to the people, to the caller, to your listener? So it's very difficult and it's challenge. Sometimes when you talk to a person, listener, who like already lost all his family, what could you tell him? No words are really, you know, acceptable for him at this moment, and that's very, very a challenge for us.
Just finally, because the next session is going to begin in a minute. What do you think of the way we in the West cover this story? Have we got it right?
No, actually not. In the beginning of the revolution, not all the international media covered. They start to cover, but after a while, there is a lack in the international media talking about Syria. There is many reasons. There is the reason of the multimedia, as the international media, and the revolution media, who tried to exaggerate in the beginning, so they lose their credibility. That's something the Syrian revolution media did, and that we have to admit that we shouldn't do it, not as Rosanna, but I mean in general. So you have to be professional and objective, because they think if we exaggerate, so the international community will interfere and rescue us. But
and we always like to think that there are two sides, and there aren't two sides. Either there's five sides or
now it's
many
more
sides,
than five. Yeah, but there is the Syrian civilian who want their freedom and dignity, and that's what we are defending them, and we are their voice.
Lena, it's what radio journalism is all about. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Lena Chowaf is editor-in-chief of Syrian radio Rosanna, based in France and Turkey. There are lots more interviews from Radio Days 2016 on their website, most of them in vision, if you can stand such a thing. My thanks to camera and sound man Colm Flynn for his sterling efforts in Paris. Our final guest on this podcast is the man in the plaid shirt, Chris Price.
Broadcast by Onyx. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
BBC Radio 1's new head of music has joined us, and you were on the platform just now with Spotify, Chris. Are they the enemy?
No. Well, right up until now, they've been amazing partners to the BBC with our Playlister service and with our recently launched BBC Music app. So, no, Spotify have been amazing partners to us. They're a great place for our listeners to deepen and enrich that discovery journey, but the discovery journey starts at Radio 1.
What is your job then, in a nutshell? Head of music, what does that mean? Are you meant to like all this stuff? You're a man in your 40s, for goodness sake.
So, yeah, my job title, Head of Music at Radio 1 and 1 Extra, supported by a very smart, passionate group of tastemakers, standing on the shoulders of giants in that respect. My responsibility is for all of the music that gets played on Radio 1 and 1 Extra, both in daytime and across the specialist schedule.
Now, listening to the man from Spotify, it was kind of sinister, really. It was all about algorithms and about information he knows about me because I've gone on his site. I wonder to what extent you're going to bring some of that thinking, some of that data thought into the Radio 1 playlist, whereas in the old days maybe it was a bit more about feel and whether producers actually liked the songs.
No, quite the opposite, actually. Funnily enough, there was an article published in The Independent a few weeks ago saying they called me an algorithms expert because I've worked for streaming services before and I've worked with them as clients, helping them kind of with their music strategy. So it's true that I do have, I guess, a reasonably deep understanding of how streaming services curate music, but I'm a radio guy at heart. I'm a music guy and I'm a passionate fan of both. So yeah, I actually kind of feel like music radio over the past 5 years or so has become a tiny bit over-reliant on data. So I'm all about bringing the passion back.
So what kind of music do you actually like? I mean, forgive me saying this, but there's a bit of a country and western vibe going on here.
Yeah, well, you know, I love everything. Actually, I do love country. Look, I've been doing this job for 20 years, and as you know, Trevor, you learn to appreciate everything. My pedigree, if you can call it that, going all the way back to when I was a student, is probably anything with guitars. That's, I guess, my first love. But I love everything from pop to hip-hop to dance. And, you know, when you're playlisting stuff, this stuff, and programming this stuff on the radio, you find the love for everything. You learn to appreciate everything.
Just one final thought. Helen Bowden is not the first BBC executive to talk about how distinctive you need to be, and your opponents, competitors, are always saying, oh, well, the trouble with Radio 1 is it just plays the same records we do, and clearly you don't. To what extent does that guide your planning of the playlist? To what extent are you thinking, we might not play that because it's a bit too popular, but we'll play this because it's not?
It's definitely something we think about. Obviously, we're really, really focused on making sure we're distinctive from commercial radio. It's actually hard to imagine how we could be any more distinctive than we are, contrary to popular views. You know, I mean, look at look at what, you know, in any given month, Radio 1 is playing about 4,000 different tracks, unique tracks. Compare that with Capital, who play about 400, or your average commercial radio station plays maybe 600 or 700.
Of course, they would say you're not that different in daytime, that you compile those figures really from the margins.
Even in daytime, the overlap is only about a third of the tracks that we playlist. Only about 25% of the songs that Radio 1 playlists actually go on to become hits, which is quite a lot less than I think most people would imagine. So I'm not sure how much more distinctive we could possibly be. It's really, really important for us to play the hits. If we just played music that was ignored by other broadcasters, we'd just become a really niche radio station, and that would, we would lose our ability to break new artists. And that's what people want from Radio 1. That's what the music industry wants from Radio 1. It's really, really important that we keep delivering that cultural capital back to the creative industries in the UK.
Chris, everybody wishes you well. Well, perhaps not everybody, but I wish you well. We all wish you well.
Thanks, Trevor.
Radio Today News now. Here's Stuart Clarkson.
Yes, thanks, Trevor. Let's have a look at the big stories then from Radio Today over the last 7 days. And as you may have heard on the Radio Today programme Extra, veteran presenter and journalist Martin Kellner has left BBC Radio Leeds after several years. And he went with a bit of a bang, being quite honest in a blog about the circumstances of his sacking. Since then, we've heard his lunchtime show on the station will be taken over by Andrew Edwards. He's replaced on Drive by Gail Lofthouse, who joins from Minster FM, and who you might remember as one half of the award-winning Dixie and Gail on Real Radio Yorkshire. Talk Radio is on the air now, launched this week with a weekday lineup including Paul Ross, Julia Hartley-Brewer, John Holmes and Ian Lee, and John and Ian, very funny. Definitely worth a listen. Two big signings for Global this week. Former BBC Breakfast TV presenter Bill Turnbull joins for Weekend Mid-Mornings on Classic FM. While at Smooth, Andrew Castle is replaced on the London Breakfast Show by Virgin and Absolute stalwart Russ Williams. Also some schedule changes at Radio 2 as Michael Ball takes over the Sunday lunchtime slot following Sir Terry Wogan's death. Richard Madeley will continue to be the holiday cover on that show. Claudia Winkleman, meanwhile, takes over Michael Ball's Sunday night slot. Sounds of the 80s moves to Friday night, The Arts Show to Thursday night, and there's a new Saturday night show which will be hosted by Craig Charles. And Radio Tyneside was the big winner at the Hospital Broadcasting Association's annual awards in Watford this week, picking up 3 gold prizes. Station of the Year went to Radio Broccoli. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Stuart Clarkson.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Many BBC announcers and newsreaders have moved on in recent years, and this week, 3 years ago, it was Harriet's turn.
BBC News at 6 o'clock. This is Harriet Cass. Good evening. BBC News.
With Harriet Cass.
The last words from Harriet Cass on Radio 4 this week in 2013. And this week last year, across on Radio 2...
...in parts of eastern and southwestern England. And having read it for 28 years, that's the BBC News at 5:05. What are you doing in here?
Well, I thought I'd come into your studio, Adele, because we couldn't let this moment pass. Everyone's going to miss you very much indeed. You are one of the voices of British broadcasting.
Well, you're very kind.
Those thoughts in mind and with lots of love, we've put this together.
Oh, no.
Yes, goodbye, Alan Dedicote from Radio 2 with the almost compulsory and very embarrassing audio montage.
And Lollipop says, good morning. The housewife's bit of rough is back today. So for Mr. Dedicote, let's shout, hooray! His voice as smooth as an expensive brandy.
Farewell, the voice of the balls this week in 2015. This week, 51 years ago, something new from the BBC.
You will have seen in your Radio Times the details of the new music programme which starts today. This is the gentle beginning which will gather strength until by next March the BBC will broadcast more than twice as much good music as now.
Don't you just love that? The start of the BBC music programme this week in 1965. It amounted to daily classical broadcasts on the transmitters of the third programme or Network 3. Life was all very complicated back then. There was a dramatic moment of radio this week 36 years ago as nature ended, at least for a time, the life of Radio Caroline.
Well, we're sorry to tell you that due to the severe weather conditions and also to the fact that we're shipping quite a lot of water, we're closing down and the crew are at this stage leaving the ship. Obviously, we hope to be back with you as soon as possible, but we'd just like to assure you all on land that there's nothing to worry about. We're all quite safe. Just for the moment, we'd like to say goodbye.
The Caroline ship, the MV Mi Amigo, sinking this week in 1980. For 8 hours, the crew were pumping the water out, but to no avail. And of course, until the very last moment, the show went on from this, one of the original 1960s Caroline ships.
I think we'll be back one way or another,
yeah,
Tom.
I think so.
From all of us, for the moment, goodbye and God bless.
Radio 1 sprung from the pirates, and this week last year, a former controller of the network died, Derek Chinnery.
If the general public out there enjoy having a background of popular music presented by friendly voices, not remote figures like the traditional broadcasters, I think that's a form of public service that the BBC can be proud of.
Derek Chinnery, controller of Radio 1 from 1979 to 1985. It's 7 years this week since we said farewell to some familiar commercial radio names. Remember 210, Fox, GWR, Orchard, Seven Sound, Gemini, Lantern, Plymouth Sound. They all said farewell as Heart spread.
Heart is coming with more music variety. 6 a.m.
The arrival of another tranche of Hearts this week in 2009. One station which later became Heart launched this week 14 years ago in Yorkshire.
This is a test transmission for the new regional radio station for Yorkshire.
On 106 to 108 FM.
It's Real Radio.
Yorkshire's best variety of music and talk.
Launching at 8 a.m. on Monday the 25th of March. Real Radio.
The arrival of Real Radio Yorkshire this week in 2002.
And a star is born.
Last year, BBC London changed its name to Radio London. It, of course, had been Radio London until 1988.
So this is Susie Barnes.
And Mike Sparrow.
And on behalf of all of us here at Radio London, saying goodbye.
And this week, 26 years ago, the station was called GLR.
The greatest music, the latest news for London from the BBC.
But was about to change its name to BBC London Live. Just thought we should get that clear. Letter from America became the world's longest-running speech programme. It began 70 years ago.
I want to tell you what it's like to come back to the United States after a sobering month in Britain, and say what daily life feels and looks like by comparison. I sailed back on the Queen Mary with a couple of thousand GI brides, and I recall now the great liner thundering its great horn as we slipped away from the dock at Southampton.
The early days of Letter from America, which began this week in 1946. So with Radio Jackie launching in London 47 years ago...
You're listening to Radio Jackie, broadcasting in the medium wave band on 227 metres. That's 1331 kilohertz.
Galaxy changing its positioning statement 8 years ago...
Love music.
This is Galaxy.
Paul Burnett starting with Radio 1 42 years ago...
Have a good day and stand by.
The BBC company moving home 93 years ago...
At 2 Savoy Hill, London.
Tower FM launching from Bolton and Bury 17 years ago.
March 20th, 1999.
And the medium wave network Gold leaving AM everywhere apart from the East Midlands, London and Manchester 2 years ago. Those are this week's radio moments.
Radio moments.
Thank you, David, and special thanks this week to the organisers of Radio Days Europe, Anders Held and Rolf Brandrud. And farewell to Rolf, who's leaving the team after 7 years, which has seen it develop from its humble beginnings in Copenhagen into the massive and unmissable annual event it's become. On the subject of conferences, by the way, I was disappointed to hear that the UK Radio Festival has been brought forward this year to September. That means it'll happen just a few days after the Ideas Conference Next Radio. And I don't think that's good for either event. Not great planning by the Radio Academy. Anyway, that's it from us. This has been a TDC production for Radio Today. and we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Ta-da.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.